Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, my amateur radio call sign, N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for spring of 2010. The business offices for the QCWA Incorporated, P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. Their voicemail is at 508-405-1930. The fax number 508-405-1965. And if you choose to email the office, the address is in lowercase, qcwagm@rcn.com. The editor of the QCWA Journal, Douglas Wallbridge. Webmaster is Bob Broski and Zero UF. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyham members and QCWA members only. Any abuse may violate copyright laws. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Handyham is always spelled lowercase, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word. The Handyham website is www.handyham.org. Let's take a look first at the QCWA officers and board of directors listing. The president, Bob Broski and Zero UF. Vice president, Kenneth or Ken D. Olke, VE6AFO. Secretary, Walter Supina, and 3WS. Treasurer Frank Harris, WA4PAM. President Emeritus Harry Daniels, W2HD. Past President John B. Johnston, W3BE. And again, the General Manager is Chuck Wallbridge, K1IGD. A short listing of the directors: Leroy Baldwin, Val Irwin, Carolyn Harrison, Tony Hirsch, Larry McAlvey, William Pasternak, Ken Simpson, Ed Yoder. And we don't want to forget our historian, Gary Harrison, K0BC, of Bolivar, Missouri. We'll begin today with the report from the President Bob Broski and Zero UF for spring 2010. QCWA has many awards that recognize contributions our QCWA members make to QCWA and to amateur radio. Please forward your recommendations for recipients to Carolyn Harrison, WB0OUM, Chairwoman of the Chapter Relations Committee, at lowercase CAROLYN hyphen WB0OUM at ALLTEL.NET by May 1st. Description for the Hall of Fame Award, the Roll of Honor Award, the John DeBlasi Award, the Distinguished Service Award and Member of the Year Award, and the Presidential Award are in the journal and on the website. Our 54th annual QCWA Spring CUSO Party is from 1800 Zulu on April 10th to 1800 Zulu April 11th. Hopefully, we'll get a sunspot or two and be able to hear and work more members. See you on the air. Our QCWA annual members' meeting will be held in conjunction with the Dayton Hamvention in May. The Hamvention Committee hasn't assigned forum rooms or times yet. Check the QCWA website at http://www.qcwa.org or the Hamvention website, which is www.hamvention.org. Before you leave home, or check the Hamvention program after you arrive for meeting information. Don't forget about the Chapter 9 banquet on Friday night. It is always interesting to attend. Information for this will be on our site as well once the program has been firmed up. The deadline for applying for any of the QCWA scholarships is May 1st. Request an application from FAR, F-A-R, at www.amateurradio-far.org. That's the President's report from Bob Broski and Zero UF. Now about the scholarship program. A very sincere thanks to all the chapters that have donated to our scholarship program this year. We continue to provide a significant contribution to the education of many young hams. The current economic environment has not provided as large an income as past years, but the fund continues to grow and provide funds to continue our program. The board has approved the scholarship committee's recommendation of 12 scholarships for 2010 in the total amount of $12,000. An application for a scholarship is available from the Foundation for Amateur Radio. Their acronym is familiar, FAR. Address your request to FAR Scholarships, P.O. Box 911, P.O. Box 911, Columbia, Maryland, M.D., 21044-0911. All requests must be received by March 31, 2010 for the academic year of 2010-2011. Unfortunately, folks, I'm recording this on March the 24th, so it's not likely that many of you will be able to respond by the March 31st deadline date, those of you that receive this in a recorded fashion. I apologize for that. There's just no control of that that I have. Our thanks to the Foundation for Amateur Radio for their support in administration of the selection process and award distribution. Leland Smith, Jr., W4YE, continues as our scholarship chairman. Thanks to you, buddy. We'll continue with some business matters from the General Manager's Report. Chuck Walbridge is the General Manager of QCWA. His call is K1IGD, Kilo 1, India Golf Delta, also spring 2010. Chuck starts with the Dayton Hamvention for 2010. We'll be requesting the same booth as last year, which was booth number 471. It is best to check the program to confirm our location. In addition to our usual booth, the Board of Directors will be holding their annual meeting on Thursday afternoon, the 13th. A report by the Board to the members will be presented at the membership meeting, most likely on Sunday morning. Check at the booth for the final time and location. Be sure to stop at the booth, sign in, and have an eyeball QSO with a member of the staff. Now, regarding the Chapter 9 QCWA Banquet, Chapter 9 will host a HempFest QCWA banquet on Friday evening, the 14th. The planned program is the Wright Seaplane Experiments, 1913/14, presented by Don Ferguson. After retiring in 1992 from the Dayton Power and Light Company, Don Ferguson met Bob Main at the local VFW post. Bob had extensive knowledge of the Wright Brothers seaplane base at the bend of the Miami River between Moraine on one side and West Carleton on the other. Dan had always been interested in the Wright Brothers and now researched with others the seaplane activity going back about 100 years. In 2007, Bob Main and others formed the Wright Seaplane Base Incorporated. This sea base was the first certified base in the United States. Plans are to get the sea base certified again and build a museum close by containing a replica of the Wright Brothers Aero Boat. The banquet will be held at the Holiday Inn Dayton Airport, corner of North Main Street and I-70 at 7:30 p.m. Reservations need to be made by May 10th. Send your check for $23 per person, made out to Chapter 9, to Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, Raglund, R-A-G-L-U-N-D. Jerry Raglund, call W-A-8-B-O-B. Whiskey Alpha 8, Bravo, Oscar, Bravo, 409 Park Avenue, Franklin, Ohio, OH, Zipper 454005. Now for the election of 2010. This is the year for the biannual election of officers and directors. Starting on page 6 is a brief biographical sketch and photo of each candidate. Ballots will be in the mail to all members by April 1. They need to be returned to the tellers by July 15, 2010. The ballot has two sections, the portion that lists the candidates and the other, where you indicate your choice of candidate. Remove that portion, which has the address of the teller. Add a first-class stamp, which is 44 cents, remember, and place in the mail. Those elected will take office effective September 1, 2010. Now, with regard to the all-important chapter reports. Thank you to all the chapter secretaries for returning the chapter reports. This form certifies your chapter charter for another year. Information on the form is used to prepare the annual list of active chapters provided to each new member and also posted on the webpage. Jen and I hope all the members enjoyed a great holiday season. We look forward to seeing old and new friends at Dayton. Have a safe trip. It's signed Chuck, K1IGD, General Manager. There's also a call correction. In the winter issue on pages 9 and 10, the call for Blake P. McCabe should be KC2GQX. Also an address correction. Charles Swindell, WB4DCM, should be listed in Raleigh, North Carolina. Charles was the third in the CW Slant Digital category in the April QCWA QSO party. And one last note. George Hart series, Random Recollections, will resume in the summer issue of the Journal. There's a significant article here on a new award designed for encouraging high-frequency operating habits. A picture of the award wallpaper is also shown. The Worked All U.S. Call Aries Award, sponsored by QCWA Chapter 119, is off to a good start. One certificate has already been awarded to the students at the Chesapeake Center for Science and Technology in recognition of their HF operations during the ARRL-sponsored school club roundup. Congratulations to the students who earned their first operating award for their club station, KJ4PGJ, whose call sign subsequently became W4FOS. The award is offered not only for Quarter Century Wireless Association members who care to mark this milestone as they begin or renew operating activities on the HF amateur bands, but the award is primarily intended as a first operating award for any individual new to amateur radio via the technician class license or any other first-time re-licensed individual, or to a more experienced amateur radio operator re-engaging in HF operations. As such, the award is meant to be a tool which QCWA members can use to encourage HF operating activity. The more experienced operator can serve as a control operator while the novice operates on the HF bands supported by a QCWA or other mentor. The award is structured so that it should be somewhat easy to earn, providing quick reinforcement for achievement in HF operations. By honoring the mentoring activities of other than QCWA members, we seek to raise the awareness of the positive contributions made by the QCWA community. In order best to achieve our primary objective, QCWA members and friends of QCWA will need to take the lead and invite the newer operators to join in this activity. Newcomers will not know about this program. QCWA members will have to take charge and lead the process. The award will have achieved its stated purpose if this mentored experience provides a kick-in-the-pants motivation for the newer operators to become more engaged in mainstream amateur radio, for example, seeking to earn a higher class license and participating in the many operating activities well known to us all. Perhaps other chapters can look at the possibility of providing tangible reinforcement for QCWA members who successfully mentor a number of inexperienced operators. We can help to build the base of amateur radio operators and introduce new operators to the standards of proper amateur radio good citizenship that is characteristic of QCWA members. Through successful mentoring experiences, who knows, perhaps one day one of us will recognize a new QCWA member as a former recipient of our successful award program. Information about the Chapter 119 Worked All U.S. Call Aries Award can be found on the Chapter 119 website at www.qcwa-ch119.org. And that was signed by Vic Culver, W4VIC. Now we're going to go to the aforementioned 2010 QCWA board candidates. There are quite a few listed with their photographs. I'll list the name and the call sign and the office for which that individual is running. We'll begin with Bob Roske and Zero UF, president, incumbent. Kenneth Ken D. Olke, VE6AFO, vice president, also an incumbent. Walter Supina, N3WS, secretary, incumbent. Frank C. Harris, WA4PAM, treasurer, incumbent. Leroy G. Baldwin, W0OFY, director, incumbent. Howard Cunningham, WD5DBC, director, new candidate. Val L. Irwin, W5PUT, director, incumbent. Gary Harrison, K0BC, director, new candidate. R.S. Tony Hirsch, W8RSH, director, incumbent. Pierre Mainville, VA3PM, director, new candidate. Lawrence McCalvey, WA9JMO, director, incumbent. Ken Simpson, W8EK, director, incumbent. Robert R. Smith, KK3P, director, new candidate. Ernest Skip Svensson, WB6VVA, director, new candidate. And of course, be sure to look at the information in the mailbox when it arrives for you, the candidates that are listed, and do what you're requested to do and mail that information back at the time it's required. And we thank you for that consideration. We have some results here for the fall 2009 CUSO party. First, thoughts. It's hard to believe that by the end of this year, that's 2010, QCWA will have originated 54 years of CUSO parties. And as we have been holding two parties a year since our golden anniversary year of 1997, the number of separate CUSO parties will total about 68 CUSO parties. Don't try to do the arithmetic. There was some confusion in the numbering when the twice-a-year switch was made. This year's logs, that is the spring and fall, total 144. I guess they're talking about 2009, fellas and gals. This year's logs, that is to say spring and fall, totaled 144. The highest number of logs turned in was in 1976, a long time ago, when the total number of logs was 392. The best we have done in my time as operating events manager was 171 logs in 2007. This year's total was helped by 368 CUSOs made on QSONET, CUSONET, the virtual radio system operating on the Internet. We had confined our operating to the 10-meter band and received 10 logs. Hopefully, with the expansion to all the bands in 2010, we will have more activity and increase the number of logs submitted. The same rules apply to QSONET, that's CQ-100, as applied to HF operations. However, HF operators do not compete with QSONET operators. The big difference is that when you receive a 5.9 or a 5.99 report on QSONET, the report is accurate for every contact you make. I had the pleasure of operating headquarters station W2MM on the CQ-100 transceiver and had many enjoyable contacts. I must say I did envy QCWA member Rita Hall, W1UZR, who not only made 51 contacts all over the world on QSONET, but took time to make 17 QSOs on her HF equipment from Sun City Center in Florida and sent in logs for both operations. The male members in our hobby had better start looking over their shoulders, as I see Stella Gurka, WB2FAU, has won the certificate for highest phone score twice in a row, along with Rita winning highest phone score on QSONET, and my wife, Frances, VE3HKG, winning highest Canadian phone, that's on QSONET. I am getting a little worried. Sidebar. Back in 2007, Frances was looking over my shoulder while I was making up her certificate. She very forcefully pointed out that the certificate read, "The Board of Directors is pleased to present this certificate in recognition of his, H-I-S, operating achievement." The wording has been changed, and I do not expect any nasty letters from Rita or Stella. And we have a word of appreciation as well to everyone who participates in our QSO parties, and especially to those who take the time to send in their logs and let Bob Boos, W2OD, and I know that our efforts are not in vain. And of course, thanks again to Bob for deciphering the logs that do get sent in. Kudos to Chapter 162 operators who put W2MM on the air for those extra multipliers. Thanks, Gary, K0BC, who not only startled me by showing up on Q-Zone Net during the party, but sent me a very nice certificate for working HQ Station W2MM while our members cruise the Caribbean. And congratulations to all our certificate winners, and a very big whoopee to Dick Church, call in for ARO, who not only is an active participant in our QSO parties, but spent many years working members in all 50 American states to win the QCWA Worked All States Award. Dick is now a member of the WAS Club and has his certificate to prove it. Dick did it the hard way on CW. See his story in a Winter Journal, page 48, if you still have that journal kicking around. And this QSO party result commentary was submitted by George Roach, VE3BNO, QCWA Operating Events Manager. And following George Roach's signature on this party results, there is a complete listing of certificate winners for the Fall QSO Party, September 2009, the 53rd year. It lists the call, the name, the location, the chapter, the rank, and the category, and that's on page 9. It continues on page 10 with continuing scores in different categories. Now, for the listeners, before I get into the chapter reports, I want to give you a heads up and a plug to the Chapter 41 hosting the QCWA convention at HAMCOM 2010. Chapter 41 will hold their convention in conjunction with HAMCON and the ARRL West Gulf Division meeting on June 11 and 12, 2010. The convention will be known as the Dallas QCWA Convention, and all QCWA chapters and their members are invited. The convention is expected to attract QCWA members worldwide. The HAMCOM HamFest, a Texas tradition, attracts several thousand hams and dozens of commercial exhibitors from all over the United States each year. More details about the Dallas QCWA Convention will soon be available at the Chapter 41 website, which is www.chapter41.org, and at the HAMCOM website, which is www.hamcom.org. Now, what you can expect: our amateur radio cavalcade of progress multimedia display, Southern hospitality, QCWA dinner, great food, a QCWA mixer, relevant discussions, XYL shopping tours, good times, friendly people. There's also an ARRL division meeting. It's the largest HamFest in the region. There's going to be a DX dinner, technical forums, commercial vendors, and flea markets. And that's Chapter 21 from the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Dallas, Texas, the Barney Moffett Memorial Chapter, the gold standard of amateur radio. Now, as I begin the chapter reports, I have to tell you, I'm working off the latest list of names requesting the report to be read. These are individuals that are generally considered handicapped and cannot read the information for themselves. And over a period of couple of years now, we've been prompting all the chapters to submit their reports for every single issue of the QCWA Journal. That doesn't always happen. So I'm going to start with Chapter 8, because that's the first one that's in the chapter reports that is printed in the listing. That's Upper Midwest, Minnesota. 20 members and guests attended our November meeting at Fort Snelling Club in St. Paul. Oni, WZRQT from the St. Paul Radio Club, presented a talk about their club's pilot program that provides mentoring to youth at the Washington Magnet Middle School. There were 12 members and guests at our annual Christmas party. The lunch, gift exchange, and camaraderie were enjoyed by everyone. We presented Century Club Awards to W0DKL, Ben Miller, W0UEI, Charles Peterson, W0TIV, James Stodolka, W0JBX, Donald Johnson, W0KZD, Joshua Premack, W0EKS, John Brevis, W0HZ, Jack Chapman, W0TN, Richard Whiting, W0PQM, Curtis Sorensen, and Alpha Alpha Zero HQ. Thomas Steele. Our meeting dates for 2010 are January 16th, March 20th, and May 22nd, all scheduled at the Fort Snelling Club. Our net meets Saturday mornings at 3.908 MHz at 0800 Central Time. Baldy, W0OFY, is the net control station. That was filed by Bob Roski, N0UF, Chapter 8 Secretary. Next, we go to Chapter 10, Michigan, MI. Chapter 10 continues to have a good turnout for its Sunday morning single sideband net. We meet at 8 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time on 3.903 MHz each Sunday morning. All are welcome to check into our net whether or not they are QCWA or Chapter 10 members. Our CW net continues on 3.530 MHz each Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. My call, WB8ICN, is the usual net control, but it varies at times when Mike isn't available. Stop in and say howdy. We're looking forward to our annual meeting, which is held in conjunction with the Cadillac Hamfest on May 1st, 2010. We always have a QCWA table at our Hamfest and then move over to Burke's Waterfront Restaurant about noon for a buffet meal and our annual meeting. We will be choosing officers to fill the president, vice president slots, and we are still looking for a secretary, treasurer, and an historian. Please consider entering your name for one of these positions. August 11, 2010 is the date of this year's annual picnic, which is held at the Kentwood Park in Cadillac at noon. Bring a dish to pass, your own beverage, no alcohol please, and table service. I hope to see many of you there. After making it through a typical Michigan winter, we are all looking forward to spring. And that was filed by Lowell D. Corbin, W8IQB, Acting Secretary. You know, folks, before I go any further, I must tell you that there was also a request for a Chapter 5 to be read, but that was not submitted. Nor was Chapter 25. Our next chapter is 41. Chapter 41, the Barney Moffitt, Texas chapter. Chapter 41 is pleased to announce that it will host a QCWA convention in conjunction with HAMCOM and the ARRL West Gulf Division on June 11 and 12 of 2010 at the Plano, Texas Convention Center, which is near Dallas on its northern border. The convention will be known as the Dallas QCWA Convention, and all QCWA chapters and their members are invited. The HAMCOM HAMFest, a Texas tradition, attracts several thousand hams and dozens of commercial exhibitors from all over the United States every year. Additional details regarding the Dallas QCWA convention will soon be available on the Chapter 41 website and on the HAMCOM website. Chapter member and National Director Val Irwin, W5PUT, furnished a comprehensive report on the QCWA National Convention cruise and described it as a fun-filled, complete success. Coverage of the cruise appears in greater detail elsewhere in this edition of the journal. Chapter members are looking forward to interesting and productive meetings in the new year and encourage all members and their families to attend, as well as to invite prospective members. That report was submitted by Bob Only, N5NT, Recording Secretary. Now, for the listeners, I would next be reading the Chapter 63 report, but that chapter did not file a report for this issue. So let's go to Chapter 65, Niagara, New York. The Niagara Frontier Chapter 65 had its annual meeting in December 2009 and elected a clean slate of officers. President Secretary Larry Rybecki, WA2ARA, stepped down and the torch was handed to Tom Foley, WA2EYF. Tom Whalen, W2QI, did not desire to keep on as vice president due to health reasons, and it was decided to leave that position vacant. Additionally, Bill Klepser, WB2AIV, agreed to relieve W2QI of the treasurer duties. Bob Rooney, W2AET, will be putting his exceptional talents to work as secretary, as he had ably done in years prior. And finally, it was decided to rewrite our bylaws to reduce our board of directors from 8 down to 2. We are assured that Paul Bond, WA2VTI, and Steve Litch, WF2S, are a good fit for that task. With this fresh group of leaders, things should be looking up for Chapter 65. Congratulations to all these gentlemen. Thank you in advance. Traditionally, the December get-together is also our Christmas party, and we had 20 in attendance at this year's event. Prizes and gifts were presented, as well as edible goodies donated by members. Dan Clark, N2DC, was presented with a Length of Service Award for 60 years of continuous licensing. Now you have to shoot for the 75-year wooden plaque in 2024, Dan. Steve Litch, WF2S, suggested the novel idea that we ask the Central New York chapter if we can join them on their weekly net, conducted each Sunday at 10:30 local time on 3917 kHz. His thought was that since we have had such poor participation on HeartNet at 1330 and 3900, maybe the morning time will be more agreeable, and besides, we'll boost their chapter as well. So the following day, several Chapter 65 members joined the morning net, and they greeted us with open arms. As an additional note, our new president, Tom, WA2EYF, has expressed the desire to resurrect our own afternoon net using club call W2SD. So we'll see how this all shakes out down the log. Come on, members, fire up them rigs. Chapter 65 meets on the second Saturday of every month at noon at Brennan's Bowery Bar and Restaurant at Main and Transit Roads in Williamsville, New York. Members from other chapters, as well as national directors and officers, are encouraged to join us when they are in the Western New York area. And we thank Larry Rybecki, WA2ARA, ex-president and secretary, for that submission. Well, steaming along here, we go to Chapter 70, QCWA National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, CA. During the fourth quarter of 2009, Chapter 70 welcomed three new members, Alan Beck, VY2WU, Michael Babineau, VE3WMB, and Ron Powers, VE3FIN. Our weekly breakfasts at Summers Hayes Restaurant continues to be popular with a good turnout even during winter storms. Executive nominations and elections were held during the annual dinner meeting at Roby's Restaurant on November 17th. Treasurer Brian Rawlings, VE3QN, will be replaced by former director Dick Bonnycastle, VE3FUA, and Dick will, in turn, be replaced as director by George Roach, VE3BNO. Following the dinner, Chapter 70 President Bob, VA3RKM, introduced guest speaker Michael Babineau, VE3WMB. Michael was first licensed in 1980 as VE1BXR and upgraded to advanced amateur in 1981. He is currently holding the call signs VE3WMB and VA2NB. Michael's ham radio interests included operating CW and Halscriber modes, portable operation, and antenna experimentation. He's also an active member of the Polar Bear QRP group and enjoys participating in Polar Bear Moonlight Madness, a monthly QRP field day event held during winter months near the date of the full moon. Michael gave a PowerPoint presentation describing a variety of hints and tricks for portable operation. His talk covered a number of topics, including a range of transceivers and battery power supplies suitable for different conditions and types of portable operation. In particular, he described and demonstrated several different kinds of antenna systems and support structures that can be used in different circumstances. In December, longtime member Keith Bedall, VE3GFI, became a silent key. Keith was an active member of our chapter, original webmaster of the Chapter 70 website, and a member of the executive for several years. Gates was also a regular attendee at our weekly breakfast. He will be missed by all. That's Keith Bedell, VE3GFI, silent key. That report was filed by Ken Pulfer, VE3PU, the secretary. Now, not meaning to rub it in, folks, but there was also a request for Chapter 80 and Chapter 95 to be read. Neither of those supplied information for this publication at this time. So let's go to Chapter 112, Yankee, State of Rhode Island. QCWA Chapter 112 held their fall meeting on October 24, 2009, at White's of Westport, Westport, Massachusetts. Tony, WA1ENO, opened the meeting. There were 12 members and guests present, and WB1ARU sent cards to W1ODO Harry, N1JS Joe, and W4GXZ Blanche. Chuck, K1IGD, reminded that dues are due every January. The link for the Yankee chapter is https://users.rcn.com/K1IGD/. Skip, WB6VVA, updated the proposal for the 2011 QCWA National Convention to be held in Rhode Island. Skip, WB6VVA, and his XYL Diane presented a video with our new projector on genealogy, steady research for your family tree. The next meeting will be our Christmas meeting on December 12, 2009. At the Chateau Restaurant in Norton, Massachusetts. QCWA Chapter 112 held their Christmas party at the Chateau Restaurant, Norton, Mass. On December 12, 2009. There were 21 members and guests present. Tony, WA1ENO, opened the meeting. The following members were selected for the nominating committee for 2010-2011. K1QLG, Fred. KK3P, Bob. And W1LDG Bill. Chuck, K1IGD, reported that the QCWA Journal will be coming soon, and that there were label issues with the post office. Cards were passed around to be signed by the members for W4GXZ Blanche and N1JS Joe. Skip, WB6VVA, ran the Yankee Swap gift exchange for the guys and gals. Our next meeting is scheduled for February 13, 2010, at a place to be determined. That was filed by Secretary Janice, K4IJK. Our next requested reports were for Chapter 127 and Chapter 143, but they were not filed for this issue. So let's pick up again with Chapter 149, the Nutmeg Chapter in Connecticut. The fall meeting and luncheon of the Nutmeg Chapter, Chapter 149, was held at Tommy's Restaurant in Middletown, Connecticut on November 14, with 27 members and guests in attendance. Everyone enjoyed the quarterly gathering. Our featured speakers at the meeting were Willard Rezev, a W1TS, a QCWA member, and his friend Bob Osborne, both of Oxford, Connecticut. For an hour or so, Willard and Bob escorted everyone at the meeting back in time, so to speak, to the summer of 1909. You see, they were personally involved in the recreation of the first cross-country automobile race that was held in 1909, exactly 100 years later, from June 14 to July 12, 2009. Will and Bob drove Bob's antique Model T Ford automobile across the country. They joined 54 other Model T Fords on this special trip that honored the centennial anniversary of the first cross-country automobile race between New York City and Seattle, Washington. The organizers of this event spent 5 years planning and setting everything into motion. The chosen route across the country replicated the same route as the original race in 1909, whenever possible. Will and Bob presented pictures, videos, and many very interesting stories about their adventure. Further information about this event is found at, this is a website, www.oceantoocean.ning.com. That first word is actually ocean to ocean, lowercase one word together, www.oceantoocean.ning.com. The Chapter 149, Nutmeg, Connecticut, report was filed by Steve Ewald, WV1X Secretary. Moving along now to Chapter 160, Utah, UT. As in life, our chapter experienced its ups and downs in 2009. We mourn the passing of Carl Vaughn Spencer, Sr., W7JHM. W7, junk, happy, me. He became a silent key on December 18, 2009, at the age of 91. Carl was a charter member of Utah Chapter 160 of QCWA. Carl was born November 13, 1918, in Salt Lake City, Utah. He joined the National Guard, and from 1941 to 1945, he was called to active duty and served in Hawaii in the Army during World War II as a radar repairman. He became an amateur ham operator, W7JHM, during this time, and he continued to do this his entire life. He was currently number one on the Farm Net roll. He served 50 years in the South Salt Lake Volunteer Fire Department. He served on the Salt Lake City Police Search and Rescue Team and a member of the Skyline Jeep Club. He worked for many years at Spirit UNIVAC as a computer specialist and retired in 1984. We will miss him. C-U-L, Carl, Q-R-T. And there is pictured Carl Vaughn Spencer, Sr., W7JHM, now a silent key, both as a young Army man in the early days and as an elderly gentleman. And folks, there was one more request for Chapter 203. However, Chapter 203 did not file a report for this issue of the Quarter Century Wireless Spring Edition 2010. We thank all of you that do and do it continually because it's a big help to the handicapped members of the QCWA who receive these copies either in cassette format or on CDs several days after they receive this master from me. So it's a good service from all of us involved at the Courage Handyham System, but we can only do our best when everybody cooperates with us. And again, we thank all of you for the opportunity to serve the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Next up on a report here is Publicity, Public Relations, and the Lost Member Column. The author, Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO. The first two items in the title of this column are so often responsible for the third. It is the lack of the first two that QCWA members cite as their main reason for leaving chapters and ultimately QCWA. Publicity and public relations, or the lack of it, do have an impact on the recruitment and retention of an organization's membership. When a group, or in the case of QCWA, a chapter, becomes complacent, membership generally declines and the group slowly dissolves. It does not take much to reverse this falling entity. Sometimes only one spark plug, a member or officer, is enough to reinvigorate and breathe life back into the group. We are all communicators, yet it is the lack of communication that many of our lost members claim as the reason they have or are leaving our organization. The chapter is no longer fun, enjoyable, interesting, or hospitable, are among the reasons I have been told that cause members to leave. Is there any truth associated with these statements? I have to conclude there is. We are losing members for reasons other than health. They are no longer interested in being part of our group. What can be done to correct this situation? For starters, your board of directors are personally contacting at this writing each chapter to find out, one, do you have programs? If so, what have been your most successful? Two, have you had success in gaining new members? If so, did you do anything special? Were you able to attract younger, still working members? And lastly, do you have meetings working folks can attend, evenings or weekends? It is hoped chapters with good programs, successful recruiting goals, growing memberships, and active community involvement will share those methods and ideas. This would allow chapters needing or would like some assistance in shoring up their membership to find workable ideas and programs of interest to attract and help retain their members. The future of amateur radio and QCWA are with our young people. We need to cultivate their interest, hone their skills, and plant the seed of desire so they will grow into the active hams our hobby needs to continue. Chapter 119 has taken this to heart by working with 6 students in the Chesapeake Public School System to obtain their amateur radio license. I think we commented on that earlier in this recording. Great. However, Rich Siff, WA4BUE, a member of Chapter 119, found that none of the 6 had gotten on to the ham bands. With a little research, Rich found the new hams lack the financial means to obtain the needed equipment to place their calls on the amateur frequencies they were entitled to use. Working with the concept of QCWA members building bridges to the future, Rich has formed a radio club with a focus on young folks, pre and teen, and amateur radio. You can find out all about the group at http://k4amg.com. The club has 30 members, numbering 5 QCWA folks in the group. The past school semester, the club concentrated on fundraising and solicitation of radio gear and were able to give out 6 complete 2-meter radio stations to the students that wanted radios. Rich tells me that, and this is a quote, "This year we present the challenge as they may have 15 or more students in need of radios, and I do not know if we will get enough stuff donated. I know these kids most likely will not have the money," close quote. If you have any ideas that might enhance his goals and you would like to share them with Rich, or you would like to donate to this most worthy adventure, Rich's email is richard.siff@verizon.net. Rich's call sign is WA4BUE. I'm also looking for ideas to publicize QCWA in positive public relations activities that our chapters might be interested in. Chapters that remain active and involved in community endeavor tend to continue and grow. Active chapters also attract and retain members. The one downside I often hear is that no one wants to take on the responsibility of a chapter office. Make a few changes so the duties do not seem so formidable. Have co-presidents, co-vice presidents, co-secretaries, and or elect a president for 2010 and a president-elect for 2011, or do the same for the other offices. That way, the person elected for the next year would have the current year to work the position before they have to take it over. As always, I welcome your suggestions, comments, and criticism. I may be reached by email at wa9jmo@wi.net and or by telephone at area 262-639-7327. That was respectfully submitted by Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO. Now, just a change of pace, for those of you who are active and do participate in the different QSO parties that we talked about earlier in this recording, here are the rules for the 54th Annual Spring and Fall QCWA QSO Party for 2010. I'm not really going to read them for you. I'm just going to tell you that they're on page 38. That wasn't very kind, was it? I think I'd put you to sleep if I tried to read all the great information here. But it does give you all the times and dates, information for exchanges, the categories, scoring, awards, where to send your logs, and all kinds of summary paragraph information that you have to fill in order to qualify for whatever award you are seeking. Again, that's on page 38 of the QCWA Journal for the spring of 2010. Well, folks, I'm getting near to the end of my voice for this recording, but I do want to include Rules and Regs Digest. The author here, as it always is John B. Johnston, W3BE. John has been a consistent, long-time server for the QCWA, filing all kinds of wonderful information about rules and regulations that many of us probably just slide right by. But I want to give him credit for that and sort of take the next 10 or 15 minutes to talk about what he has to say this time. But before I begin, there is a disclaimer which goes, opinions expressed by the authors of articles contributed to the journal do not represent the official position of the offices or directors of the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated. John B. Johnson, W3BE, titles it, Some Things About Repeaters That You May Not Know. Subtitle from talks given to the Green Mountain Repeater Association and the Laurel Amateur Radio Club. Those who were licensed before or during the period 1968 to 1973, please recall with me those formative days when repeaters were just beginning to capture the attention of hams everywhere. The rest of you will just have to take our word for it. There really was a time when there were no repeaters. We have a lot of hams to thank for making our infrastructure of some 20,000 repeaters possible. Thank you for being there in the thick of it from the very beginning with your helpful participation and thoughtful suggestions. For me, it all began in 1971 in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where I was very active in DXing and cost testing. At a meeting of our local Penn Wireless Association, it was proposed that the club sponsor a 2-meter FM repeater. That was at the time when FM transceivers were just starting to appear in ham radio stores. Back then, they were largely do-it-yourself projects. My first 2-meter FM rig was a modified Motorola HD220. The surplus circuit board came from Art Householder. The case and other parts were obtained from a service center and 6 sets of crystal from International. My assignment was to look into the rules for repeaters. I reported back that Part 97 at least didn't even mention them. Little did I suspect that I was having a glimpse of my immediate future at the FCC. How did I get that job? My background was 20 years in engineering R&D projects, primarily with GE and RCA. While in D.C., I visited the FCC personnel office with my resume in hand. As I was scanning the job postings, a gentleman asked me to step into an office. He said, I work for the government, but not for the FCC. I am here on a special assignment. This agency needs people with your experience. But you're not going to get a job by just answering job postings. Those positions will probably go to people already here. He advised, study the organizational chart carefully and decide where you want to work. Then contact that bureau chief and explain how you can help. He's the only one that will make the hiring decision. After sending a letter to the Chief of Safety and Special Radio Services Bureau, I received a call asking me to come in for an interview with Prose Walker, Chief of the Amateur and Citizens Division. A lot of hams think that I knew Prose and got the job through him, but I had never met him until that meeting. Apparently, he was impressed that I was one of the very few who had obtained an amateur extra-class operator license before incentive licensing hit. He asked, how would you like Bill Grinfeld's former job as chief of the rules branch? Rulemaking has been a standstill ever since Bill retired a couple of years ago. There is a report in order about ham repeaters way overdue, and there is a backlog of another 100 petitions. Before fully accepting me, however, I had to pass his code test. It was no 5-minute run. It was a live, over-the-air QSO on 40 meters. Prose set as my personal assignment the drafting of the report and order in docket 18803 concerning the licensing and operation of repeaters. In February 1970, the FCC had adopted the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking based upon petitions filed by 3 parties, the Buffalo Amateur Radio Repeater Association, the Texas State Division of Defense and Disaster Relief, and 3 hams filing jointly. It proposed authorizing repeaters on VHF and above. For 2 meters, there would be 2 sub-bands for 10 channels split 600 kilohertz, automatic station identification every 3 minutes, 600 watts input maximum, no cross-banding, and no chain repeaters or multiple outputs. The thousands of comments from the amateur service community filled several volumes. I read every one of them. No 2 of them seemed to be in agreement. That was when I first came to better understand the nature of our amateur service community. While we do a pretty fair job of coming together and fighting off a threat to our amateur radio services, we too often fall apart when it comes to arriving at a consensus concerning contentious internal issues. That must be why we traditionally appeal to the FCC to make decisions for us. We just can't seem to get enough of those restrictive rules. Whenever the FCC does become involved, however, it tends to adopt a compromise. That usually infuriates everyone because no one gets exactly what they wanted. We would be so much better off if we could function even if Part 97 were to be stripped of everything but the frequency tables and our golden rule. Each amateur station must be operated in accordance with good engineering and good amateur practice. PROS recognized correctly that the amateur service community was missing one of the basic tenets for numerous stations transmitting with channelized technology 24/7 within the same band. There must be effective coordination, but no one was stepping forward with such a plan. So, how large was the repeater movement going to be? That question was asked of everyone claiming expertise. Their answers were all over the place. Some predicted it would be short-lived, much as was the 10-meter FM experiment in the post-war 1940s. The typical guess was around 500. Based upon that short-sighted number, it appeared that there would be more than enough 2-meter spectra to accommodate everyone who wanted the repeater pair. When PROS retired, I became division chief, the last person to hold that job. The division had become overly large. Our ham radio population had increased threefold. Personal radio was growing dramatically. We had responsibility for administering both the rules, licensing, and public information for 3 rule parts. That work has now been redistributed among several divisions within the current FCC. And folks, I go now toward the end of the commentary by John B. Johnson. It's very lengthy, but very interesting. As popular as repeaters are, hams are not of a mind to turn the entire band over to them quite yet. Ham radio is the place where very creative people come along unexpectedly and apply technology in ways that most of us can't even begin to imagine. We anticipate confidently that even more wondrous things will be making their appearances somewhere down the log. And that report on Rules and Regulations, the Digest, was filed by John B. Johnston, W3BE. John's address is 17701 Bowie Mill Road, Durwood, Maryland, zip code 20855. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that just about brings me up to time for the reading of the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for the spring of 2010. Subscription to the journal for non-members in the United States is available for $25 per year. You can contact the business office for subscription information. The QCWA Journal is available free to blind paid-up members on audio cassette, tape, or CDs. And for more information about that, you would contact Vic Culver. Call W4VIC 1020. That's 1020 Lyndhurst, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23464. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members and, of course, QCWA members only, unless otherwise specified. Any other use may violate copyright laws. If you'd like to find out more about the Handy Hams, you can call 763-520-0512 or send an email to Handy Ham, and that's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, handyham@courage.org. Great website, www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. And if you're curious, my QTH or geographical location is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, down near Buzzards Bay, on the way to good old Cape Cod. If you'd like to comment to me directly, you're welcome to do so. My last name is spelled Zeida. My email is my call sign, N1BLF at comcast.net. Thanks again for listening along with me here on the Courage Andyhem System, in coordination and cooperation with the Quarter Century Wireless Association, 73. I hope your spring is good and your summer is even better. Be talking to you soon. Bye-bye.